Hi, and welcome to the episode about sacred sand art, not long for this world. I'm excited about this episode. It takes us into the parched mysteries of the Southwest Desert in the United States, to the Navajo Nation, where sunburnt stone and windswept canyons have witnessed generations of legendary healing that may seem an enigma to outsiders of this solitary wilderness. There are doorways, and then there are doorways. Sand paintings are the art of the medicine man and woman who are also known as singers. They create sand paintings that are a sort of doorway where the gods can come and go. This seems like nothing short of extraordinary and supernatural. A doorway for the gods is simply otherworldly and magical, which is just the kind of story I like. There are two areas in which we focus. First, we focus on the Navajo sand painting, and then about Tibetan sand painting. I am proceeding as best I can with respect for these cultures, people, their beliefs and traditions. The following poem, White Shell Ever-Changing Woman, was written by Sunny Dooley, former Miss Navajo Nation, a storyteller and poet and folk singer. And this is how we'll take our first step into the world of the Navajo Diné people. At the purest edge of darkness, at the purest start of light, mists of sky and mists of earth embraced. As clouds of white, blue, abalone, and jet swirled from east to west, from north to south, unfurled ribbons of rainbows crossed beneath its arch, taking sacred breath was a child, resting on all the essences of what is all of earth and what is sky, nourished on dewdrops and pollens, she stood on turquoise, stepped into her white shell moccasins of endurance. She wrapped blue velvet clouds around her. Upon it, she placed the mountains, river, streams, and cloud vapors. She belted her waist with the rainbow. On her wrist, she placed laced of swirling clouds of white shell, turquoise, abalone, and jet. She took a grass brush, began to comb her hair, that lay as sprays of rain and fragrant blossoms. She combed into each strand every subtle nuance of grace, strength, charm, and wisdom, wrapped it into a bundle at the nape of her neck, tied it with sunbeams. She stood illuminated. This white shell, ever-changing woman, when she spoke, it was Hosoji. This was read as it was posted on Facebook by Horsehair and Lipstick. I first heard this on a documentary. Welcome to the Whispering Gallery, where the stories take us well beyond the art world, this time to a mysterious, wind-blown country where our curiosity can lead the way. My name is Suzanne Nicolaisen, and I love learning about the unusual and unbelievable in the art world with you. Thanks for joining me. If you've already been listening, welcome back. And if you're new, I'm glad you're here. I hope you'll subscribe and stick around with our little community of spooky art fans. Today, Shotzi is joining me in the studio, so if you hear little jingles of her collar, that's who you're hearing. I'm excited to welcome you because you are here. We have listeners from all around the world on 4 of the 7 continents, which was kind of a wow, right? We're an international crew. Welcome to those of you in Austria, Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Bolivia, Brazil, India, and the United States. Totally cool, right? Today we're beginning our exploration of the impermanent nature of 2 sacred types of dry sand painting that developed independently across the world from each other on large continents, both with inland arid deserts. Sand painting, after all, seems pretty reasonable in these regions. One of my art professors taught that we shouldn't be precious about our art. I'll try to explain how this is related. It's basically being so tied to each piece that we create that we're unable to walk away from it. That it is too good, basically, is my understanding. That part of our ego is being too tied up in what we've created. And that this isn't a good headspace to live in with our art. I think this was the gist of what he was talking about. This resonates with me, but also, if you're trying to share your art, it makes your art more of a practice than something permanent. So, sort of my sketchbook, I guess, is how I can wrap my brain around it. Still kind of esoteric to me, but, you know, worth studying. It's further explained by Peter Hahn, working in chalk. He says, "No matter how great that piece looks on the chalkboard, eventually, no matter what, you gotta erase it." That's from Peter Hahn, Pardon My Dust, in his video at https://vimeo.com/69450259. It's worth seeing. Chalkboard art can be easily smudged and removed, so too can sand paintings. And the sand paintings we're talking about are actually destroyed after they're made. It's kind of zen, like being present creating the work, being present with the process, and that is the point, not about saving and holding on to each piece that is created, not hoarding the bad and good. No one will ever know how productive we've been as artists if we stick to this thought process. We will each be an enigma. One kind of sand painting is used by people of the Navajo Nation for healing ceremonies. The Navajo people are American Indian and the largest American tribe. The Navajo Nation is located in the southwest of the United States, North America. Latitude and longitude noted by Google as 36.0672 degrees north, 109.1880 degrees west. The elevation ranges from the mountains at 10,388 feet down to the desert floor at 2,760 feet. The Navajo are also known as the Diné, and the medicine man or woman who create the sand paintings is called a singer. The other kind of sand painting is found clear across the Pacific Ocean in Tibet, which is an autonomous region in China. The Cambridge Dictionary Online states the definition of autonomous as an autonomous organization, country, or region is independent and has the freedom to govern itself. I needed to look that one up just to make sure I understood what it meant rather than just regurgitating facts to you that I've been gathering. In a movie I watched recently, the Dalai Lama stepped back from being involved in politics. There was an emphasis that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a monk, but he is also the spiritual leader for the Tibetan people. Tibet is located in the Himalayas with an elevation reaching up to 14,000 feet. Part of Mount Everest is in Tibet. The coordinates are 30.1534 degrees north and 88.7879 degrees east. The sand painting used in Tibet that I've been researching is used by Buddhist monks to create the Kalachakra mandala. The Dalai Lama has explained that they create the Kalachakra Mandala sand painting to help promote world peace. This episode will be focusing on Navajo sand paintings. The Navajo Nation spans New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. There's just over 7,700 miles between the Navajo Nation and Tibet, with the Pacific Ocean between them. I'll post a Google map on Instagram showing where the two places are compared to one another. It's kind of striking how the parallels of latitude being 30 in Tibet and at 36 at the Navajo Nation across the world from each other. When you see the map, they almost line up. Kind of a weird coincidence, but given the arid desert areas, maybe not. I didn't know about this when I started my research, but it was interesting to discover. This topic became a two-parter as the story began to unfold. I had more questions or found more mysteries that I needed to investigate. This episode is about sand paintings created by the Navajo medicine man or medicine woman, also known as a singer. This recording pushed out a little due to two little dachshund visitors who came to stay with my family until they get adopted and have been keeping me and my husband Eric on our toes. They are a mother and daughter bonded pair, and I just wanted to let you know what was up and that I didn't forget about you. Four dogs, at least for me, is a handful. Where else could I start when learning about sand paintings besides with the artists, but the medium? I know there could be specific places, pigment, etc., but for the sake of our conversation, let's roll with sand. The Cambridge Dictionary Online states the definition of sand as a substance that consists of very small grains of rock found on beaches and in deserts. Sand is moved around the world where there are dust storms combined with weather fronts. Wikipedia lists that dust devils can reach speeds of 45 miles per hour, and UtahEther.org shares that Utah's dust devils have been called crypto vortices or sneaky winds. Those were just too cool of names not to share. Sneaky winds, you know? Yikes! I thought you might find this interesting from the article, Devilish Source of Dust in Atmosphere of Earth and Mars, from Science Daily, September 18, 2017. Quote, swirling columns of sand and dust known as dust devils are a feature of desert areas on Mars and on Earth. Now a study of terrestrial dust devils has shown that around two-thirds of the fine particles lifted by these vortices can remain suspended in the atmosphere and be transported around the globe. Unquote. Okay, now I've got to bring things to a grinding halt and shift gears. I've gone down a rabbit hole about sand. What if the sand used to create the healing sand paintings and mandalas isn't the sand that is on a beach? What if it's not the kind of sand Lawrence of Arabia trudged through in the parched desert? Have you seen this movie? Maybe this question is where my research should have really started, because of course, it's different. But I needed to take that first step into the unknown. This question came up when I tried to find out how the sand obtained its pigment. Was it dyed? From what I've learned, the sand is made by crushing rock that is found within the Navajo Nation region, like red sandstone, yellow ochre, and it turns out there are dunes of white sand, gypsum, in New Mexico. The nps.gov/WHSA site shares, quote, when it comes to sand, size is all that matters. That is because sand is defined as any mineral between 0.065 millimeters and 2 millimeters in diameter, which is about the width of a nickel. Unquote. The colored sand is created from natural materials representing the four sacred mountains and may also act as a symbol for direction or time of day. White is gypsum representing White Shell Mountain, Sierra Blanca Peak, Colorado. Gypsum may be in the form of selenite crystal, desert rose, or sand. You may know about it as it's used for drywall, plaster, fertilizer, and I'm sure there's way more to it. What if you were to grind it up? Just add water and it resumes its rock-like state. 275 miles of desert in New Mexico are covered by dunes of gypsum sand, making it the biggest dune field in the world. This is a protected area known as White Sands National Park. CaSO4 and 2H2O is calcium sulfate dihydrate. It's the chemical definition of gypsum. Yellow is ochre for Abalone Shell Mountain, Humphreys Peak, Arizona. Iron oxide gives the clay its color. It's a naturally occurring clay. Black is charcoal for Coal Mountain, Hesperus Peak, Colorado. This is a powder of carbon and ash. Blue is charcoal and gypsum for Turquoise Mountain, Mount Taylor, New Mexico. And red represents sunlight and is sandstone. The color red is sacred. The following explanation on how a wider range of colors is achieved came from room226.weebly.com. Navajo-sandpaintings.html. Quote, crushed dried plants, including cornmeal, powdered bark, pollen, or flower petals, are added to the mix to achieve a fuller range of colors. Sand paintings are more accurately called dry paintings because of the natural materials from which they are produced. Unquote. Now I have a quote from Britannica.com. Blessing Way, central ceremony of a complex system of Navajo healing ceremonies known as sings or chants that are designed to restore equilibrium to the cosmos, anthropologists have grouped these ceremonies into six major divisions: the blessings, holy ways, life ways, evil ways, war ceremonials, and game ways. This came from a posting from February 2nd, 2021, at Britannica.com, topic Blessing Way, Navajo Ritual, Britannica. Sand paintings are created to aid with healing, and some are blessings, like the Blessing Way, used to bless a newborn baby or a new hogan. From Tony Hillerman's book, The Ghost Way, quote, everything is connected. The wing of the corn beetle affects the direction of the wind, the way the sand drifts, the way the light reflects into the eye of man beholding his reality. All is part of totality, and in this totality, man finds his horzo, his way of walking in harmony, with beauty all around him. Unquote. And Joseph Campbell stated, the Navajo have that wonderful image of what they call the pollen path. The Navajo say, oh, beauty before me, beauty behind me, beauty to the right of me, beauty to the left of me, beauty above me, beauty below me, I'm on the pollen path. Unquote. I found a definition about ozo. Please pardon my pronunciation, Google Translate doesn't have Navajo. This was mentioned in the opening poem. Ozo, when you're truly at peace with yourself and one with your surroundings, and nothing anyone does or says can or will affect, or no negativity or malice can touch you. The Navajo people are a mix of different tribes called Diné, and each tribe brings their gifts. I've watched a few documentaries while preparing for the podcast, and they have been through a lot. The sand paintings are created by the medicine men and women and are a go-between for the patient and the holy people. Here is a quote from ehillerman.unm.edu, and it reads, medicine man is an anglicized term that refers to traditional Native American healers. However, each tribe has unique understandings about the roles and responsibilities of their healers, who may also double as spiritual leaders. In the Navajo culture, there are four categories of healers, listeners, hand tremblers, and stargazers who may be consulted about sickness, identifying witchcraft, dreams, lost items, or many unusual happenings. But it is the Hatali, or singer, who fills the position of medicine man in Navajo culture. Traditionally called a hatali or singer in Navajo, this healer performs ceremonial cures that are targeted at body, mind, and spirit. There are nearly 100 Navajo chants of varying range and intricacy, originating from the Navajo creation story. They are so nuanced and complex that a medicine man learns only one or two sings over many years of apprenticeship. Ceremonies last anywhere from 1 to 9 days and include chants, songs, prayers, lectures, dances, sweat baths, prayer sticks, and sand paintings. In order for a ceremony to be effective, everything must be done as prescribed in the legends. Again, this is from E. Hillerman at the University of New Mexico's site, ehillerman.unm.edu. The western desert area of Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico is where the largest tribe in the United States is located, the Navajo Nation. With a population of 300,000-ish, has been affected by 30,079 cases of COVID-19 as of March 31, 2021, and they have fully immunized 88,891 people as of March 25, 2021. They have heard on the news, they have also been immunizing people who come in from neighboring communities who are non-Navajo. The Navajo people arrived in the Southwest around 1541. Their language is sacred and is related to the peoples in Canada and Alaska. I watched the documentary Miss Navajo, and it was pretty cool to see the experience the young woman shared, from drumming, cooking Navajo fry bread, speaking in Navajo, and a very unexpected category to me was butchering a sheep. Life is different there. For example, water was trucked in to the home of one of the young women the story was following. I also watched a couple of funny fake documentaries on fry bread, which was cheesy humor and cute, but fry bread has been an important part of survival in this harsh environment. And a Smithsonian Magazine article, Fry Bread, This Seemingly Simple Food is a Complicated Symbol in Navajo Culture, reads, quote, "For Lewis and many other Native Americans, fry bread links generation with generation and also connects the present to the painful narrative of Native American history. Navajo fry bread originated 144 years ago when the United States forced Indians living in Arizona to make the 300-mile journey known as the Long Walk and relocate to New Mexico onto land that couldn't easily support their traditional staples of vegetables and beans. To prevent the indigenous populations from starving, the government gave them canned goods, as well as white flour, processed sugar, and lard, the makings of fry bread." Unquote. That came from smithsonianmag.com/arts-culture/frybread-79191. I've got another quote coming your way from Tony Hillerman, his book The Sacred Clowns from 1993, about when do they create sand paintings. "Terrible drought, crops dead, sheep's dying, spring dried up, no water. The Hopi and the Christian, maybe the Muslim, they pray for rain. The Navajo has the proper ceremony done to restore himself to harmony with the drought." You see what I mean? The system is designed to recognize what's beyond human power to change, and then to change the human's attitude to be content with the inevitable. Again, that was a quote from Tony Hillerman's Sacred Clowns from 1993. The medicine man or woman chants while creating a sand painting, which is the last part in the healing ceremony, and they ask the holy people to come into the sand painting and to help heal the patient. As the ceremony continues, the patient is asked to sit on the sand painting, where they will absorb the spiritual healing and the illness is removed by the holy people. Sand paintings are created within 12 hours, usually during the daytime, and are destroyed after the ceremony because it has absorbed the illness and it's considered toxic. The sand painting is created usually on the floor of the hogan, and it's created by holding sand in the palm and letting the sand out, guided by the index finger with the flow controlled by the thumb. There aren't a lot of photos of these sacred works, but some have been created for the purpose of sharing what they look like. This is sacred art that is by its nature temporary, but caring, grounding, and connecting, a place where the gods come and go. I mentioned the Hogan, and the Hogan is likened to a place of worship, but also a place to live. I heard it likened to a cathedral, but also a place for healing. The Hogan used to be a dome-shaped building covered in mud, but they've changed. They still have a circular footprint as octagonal or hexagon shape, and the door has always faced east, where the gods gather at the beginning of the day. Here we are with wispy details about sand paintings, the mysterious and sacred threshold to the Navajo Diné gods and healing ceremonies, rolling waves of pale sand dunes of gypsum, and the immediate destruction of the sand painting after the ceremonial and the desert canyons and open windswept spaces. I decided I was going to make some fry bread. And was it ever so much easier and reliable than how a similar but yeast-based fry bread scones were made at my house while I was growing up, from a bake-and-serve bread? Thank you for joining me today. If you have any stories from the art studio, or about art that falls into the realm of spooky stories or hauntings, please send me an email, and I'll share it on the podcast. So please send your story, or even if you'd like to say hello, or give me information on a past podcast that you can shed some light on something, that would be great. You can contact me at whisperingcontact@gmail.com. If you're a subscriber, thanks a bunch. If you're not, please consider joining our group of spooky art story fans, and please share the podcast with a friend or family that might enjoy it. Next time, we'll be trekking into Tibet for the Kalachakra Mandala sand painting and conclude this two-part series. I think I've mentioned that I've been waiting on some art books about Dutch floral paintings. They have arrived from a couple of secondhand shops online. So the time-shifting paintings of flowers by Dutch artists is coming. Now, I'd like to say thank you to my resources. Thanks to room226.weebly.com/NavajoSandPaintings.html. Thank you to the Internet Archive for our fun music. Great courses, Goodreads, Britannica.com, Wikipedia, NavajoPeople.org, Navajo-NSN.gov, UNM.edu, the Libby Library app that you can read on Kindle, HouseOfAsh.com for the fry bread recipe, Amazon Prime, Freesound.org, and the documentaries I watched included Where the Highway Ends, Navajo Springtime, Miss Navajo, Fry Bread, and More Than Fry Bread. The writing and production of the Whispering Gallery podcast and copyright are held by Suzanne Nicolaisen. You can contact me at whisperingcontact@gmail.com. You can tell when it's getting close to me releasing a new episode on Instagram because the posts start showing up. Look for these at Whispering Gallery Podcast on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, you can visit buymeacoffee.com/suznikart. Thank you again for listening. Keep your flashlight on and your spooky art stories close while visiting the Whispering Gallery. Take care, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.